Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. This means that unlike mainstream social media, your trophy pictures won't be censored. They're encouraged. As you spend time on Go Wild, you will earn awesome rewards such as gift cards, free swag, and big discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex. You will even earn $10 just for signing up. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the O2 Podcast. Tonight, it is Andrew and Paul. Paul, how's it going?
Good, bud. How you doing?
Oh, yeah, buddy. We're just living the dream one day at a time. Whatever, it was 20 degrees today. And
it was miserable.
It's cold.
It's cold. Man,
it's cold.
It's going to be like 68 or something like that on Wednesday this week when I'm in Ridgeville.
Thank you, Ohio. Thank you.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know it's cold when the eggs are freezing out there in the chicken coop. So the what's up? Let's see. We start off with our little announcement here about Go Wild. Go Wild is an online platform for hunters and anglers, outdoorsmen, all kinds of out and women all over the place. What a cool app. It's encourages you to post your pictures of your catches, of your harvest, whatever you guys are doing, what podcast you're listening to, if you went out for a hike, logging workouts. It's got a lot of stuff on there, as well as a store and all kinds of deals and stuff going on there. Get you ready for turkey season coming up. But Paul and I have been working with these guys now for a little bit, writing some articles for them, and they started posting those on their website. And that's always fun.
The picture of your article is pretty funny.
Yeah. So I took the a lot of what Mike taught us and told us about the putting your bows to bed for the winter. And I happened because, you know, I just happened to have my bow in my bedroom. I'm like, what would be better than a picture of the bow in my bed? So I took the picture and I sent it to the guys at Go Wild, and then I sent it to my wife, and one side was very happy to see the picture of the bow in the bed, and the other side wasn't. And, you know,
I guess your wife probably thought you were an idiot.
Oh, she knows I'm an idiot. There's no thinking there. So, but anywho, if you're not on Go Wild, I suggest you need to go check it out. Good stuff over there. You can look us up. We've got O2 Podcast page, as well as Andrew Muntz, and then Paul Campbell also has his page, and join the crew there. So, Paul, what do we got news wise?
All right, so let's see here. So the DNR, they had their 2022-2023 deer hunting proposals presented to the Ohio Wildlife Council, and so this is kind of neat. This is kind of the way that our rules and regulations in the state of Ohio are, how we change them is the public. So if you don't like something as a hunter or an angler, the state of Ohio gives you a chance to comment on the proposed rule changes for the upcoming hunting and fishing season. So you can go to wildohio.gov. That time started today, February 14th, and runs until March 16th. So you can comment on those, the rule changes. And then there's a statewide hearing on all proposed rule changes will be held on Thursday, March 24th, 2022 at 9 a.m. So nothing crazy. There's a proposal to remove some of the chronic wasting disease surveillance areas on public land.
That would be
like
pretty
big. Island was being pulled off, and some of the other ones, you know, north where there's some CWD issues. So
that's cool. I think that's a good sign. Like if they're removing them, then that's a good sign that the maybe they didn't find a whole lot this year. So we'll see. It'd be interesting to talk.
Definitely.
When we talk to Mike again.
Yeah. So we got Mike and Lindsay Thomas coming up here in a few weeks. So look forward to that. Keep an eye out for that episode dropping. Mike Thomas or Lindsay Thomas from the Deer Association, and then Mike Tonkovich from the Ohio Department of Wildlife. So That's going to be a really good one. Months, you got the kill numbers. They released those kind of in between our last recording session.
I do. So we've got our 2021-2022 deer season stats. A total of 196,988 deer were harvested. Just over nine. Yeah, that's a lot. Almost 200,000. So, which I think we look when we looked up the one day, we're over just over 300,000 whitetail hunters or hunters in Ohio. So almost 2/3 of the hunters are getting a deer theoretically. So archery wise, just over 96,000 firearms, almost 80,000 muzzleloader, just over 12,000. The youths, they took out 7,600 plus. And then almost 1,200 in the controlled firearm hunts. Paul, do you want to guess what county had the most deer harvested again?
I'm gonna say those you damn hillbillies out there in Coshocton County. That's my guess.
They're not hillbillies. They're slayers, man.
I love them. Those are my people, man.
Coshocton. Am I right? Yes, number one. Yeah, over 7,000.
Deer killing machines out there in Coshocton County. Good for you, boys. Ashton Buell, them killing fools. Got to be top five, right?
No.
What?
So I'll go down, down the line here. You got Coshocton, Tuscarawas, Muskingum, Knox, Licking, represent.
Yeah.
Ashton Buell, Guernsey, Holmes, Carroll, and Trumbull. So again, it's that.
That's it. That's
northeast. It's north central.
Ashton Buell boys are slacking. It's all that damn snow up there. They can't. And then get out and hunt in it. So
that's true.
That's a good year. Good season. 85. I don't know how that stacks up against years in the past.
Yeah, that's. I wish I had that in front of me. But $85,000, almost 90,000 does, over 18,000 button bucks, and then almost 3,400 there were bucks with shed antlers, and bucks with antlers less than 3 inches. So, pretty good numbers there, I think. But we'll. Again, we'll have to ask Mike how that holds up compared to the years past.
Yeah, for sure. It'd be neat to find out. So let's see. No, I didn't know. Obviously, no hunting. I mean, I think the only thing available to hunt the last couple weeks or last week was, I think, rabbit, maybe some goose. I honestly don't know. But, man, I haven't been outside much. So
I went out and I took down all my stands that I had, my sets that were sticks and platforms still out there. But it was like not even good walking outside because of that ice. I was going to, and then the mix of having snow and, dead foliage and stuff wasn't good for finding sheds. And it just wasn't fun to walk through. So hopefully we got to get rid of that. But Paul, before we get into that, we got just a couple more things. We got maple syrup festivals going on coming up here. Yeah. So, if you've never been, these are pretty fun. It's pretty interesting how much it takes to get maple syrup to your finished product and the ways of the past versus some of the newer ways. I've been a couple of these over the years. If you got little kids, it'd be fun. So there's going to be one up in Hocking Hills, Houston Woods, Indian Lake Development, their 35th annual Maple Syrup Festival. And then Malabar Farm State Park also has a Maple Syrup Festival. It's on odnr.gov's website if you want to take a look and some of the dates and times. But, Paul, we would be remiss if we did not take the opportunity to talk about ice fishing in Hudson. I'm sure that most people at this point have heard the story about what ice fishing may bring. And I won't get into it because I don't know all the details, but I know enough that it's funny. When the Hudson mayor, who has now resigned in the wake of the ice fishing debacle, and I guess that's per Cleveland.com. So he was in the council meeting there, and they were talking about allowing ice fishing in Hudson, in which he said once you have ice fishing, then you're going to have shanties. And when you have shanties, what do those bring? And the obvious answer is prostitution. So, and that's where
he went there.
And, yeah.
And the best part of the video was the poor bastard next to this guy. After he opens his mouth, the guy said it was left. Just kind of like looks around and was like, oh shit, did he just say that? Like, this is being recorded. Okay. He just said that. What an idiot. Like, I mean, like, if you live in Hudson, Ohio, and you voted for this moron, like, come on. This is not the first time. I saw some other stuff where he said some dumb shit. I don't even remember what it was. I mean, I'm not going to Hudson to ice fish, but I think ice fishing shanty lead to prostitution. You know what? The dude may be right. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just like, that should be your main concern about, you know, ice fishing shanties is prostitution. It's come on, man.
Somewhere I read where Hudson sold like 10,000 fishing licenses over the last couple days, but
that's hilarious. Yes, so. Yeah, everyone's like, oh, ice fishing? Yeah, sick bastards.
So good luck to all you ice fishermen up there outside of Akron. But
I thought when you were diving into this topic, I thought you were going to talk about our friends from down south, Houday Nation. I hope you guys are recovering, licking your wounds. Good year, good season. You know, I'd rather play and lose than, you know, not play at all, I guess.
All I can say, Paul, is go Browns. So, but yeah, go on to this week's topic of discussion. It is that kind of lull, and we've got shed season for if you're an average deer hunter or whatever. So these are always fun. It's when you find one, it is special because it's part of the animal, right? And you take it home, and I don't know. I just like to look at them. The kids think they're really, really cool. The dog really thinks they're cool. But we have Steve Shirk from Shirk's Guide Service over in he's in North Central Pennsylvania. But I actually forgot. Hang on a second.
You guys are awesome. Yeah. He's a good talk. He does a lot of trail cam work too. So I know he's like a big woods hunter. I don't know if he does like a lot of stuff with Bo Martonic, but I think they know each other from what their Instagram feeds.
I think they
seem to do. But the guy's a deer killing machine, and he's got a really good system to like track and pattern deer and find bedding areas. I don't know. He's one of those guys that like puts a lot of effort into the preseason scouting and gets really detailed. And we dive into a little bit about that with kind of his process of how he tracks data and what he does with that data. It's really, really interesting. I think you guys are going to like it. So,
all right. Because I was a terrible host and I did not give him the opportunity to read off his credential or his stuff. His Instagram page is Shirk's Guide Service, all one word. So Shirk is spelled S-H-E-R-K-S, S-H-E-R-K-S, Guide Service. That's his Instagram page. And then his website is shirksguideservice.com. But yeah, as Paul was saying, the dude, he lives for this. It's all big woods, mountain deer.
Public land.
And we see big deer in Ohio a lot, and you just think, oh, they're eating all the corn and stuff. These deer eat dirt, okay? Like, obviously,
some of the deer that he's got trail cam pictures of are insane.
When you're over there, you wouldn't know these deer are out there. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, these would be big deer in Ohio, let alone up in the mountains chewing on sticks. So I hope everybody enjoys it. Hope you learned something. Steve's got quite the interest here in the deer, and I think he gave us a pretty good, at least an intro or something to think about and when you're out shed hunting and scouting for next year.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Find sheds, tag us. Tag us on Go Wild. Tag us on Instagram. You can tag us on Twitter. I'll interact. Facebook, don't worry about it.
Negative. Where's that horn? One of these. We got like a little horn thing. I don't know. I can't hear it now. But
Facebook horn. We're still trying to figure out this fancy stuff.
One of these days. Oh, wait, I think.
Appreciate you guys listening, man.
Paul, you ready? I think I figured it out. Ready?
Let's do it. Do it. I can't hear it.
You can't hear it? Oh, okay. Well.
Oh, you're bobbing your head like an idiot. I can't hear anything. So, all right. Upcoming episodes. We got Scott Ellis from Woodhaven. A dude's won like every possible turkey calling award competition you can imagine. He's coming on. We got Lindsay and Mike coming up. Really good. And we've got, I'm going to tease it a little bit here, Munts, but we've got like a really cool Sportsman's Nation little discussion coming up.
A little round table.
With some little round table. You guys, it's going to be, we're going to have like a beer counting tracker, like how many beers all of us drank during this talk. It's going to be nuts. It's going to be great. It's going to be an instant classic in the O2 Podcasting Hall of Fame, I think. So good stuff. Appreciate you guys listening, man.
And welcome back, everybody. Welcome to the O2 Podcast. Today, we are joined with our special guest, Steve Shirk of Shirk's Guide Service. Steve, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Oh, you know, we're a little depressed over here because deer season.
Yeah, maybe I should rephrase. I could be better, but still doing good.
Steve is joining us from Pennsylvania, right, Steve? Over there in the northern part of the
You got it. North central, northwestern PA.
And I know that area pretty well from some of my endeavors, but it is big woods country. And today we are going to talk to Steve a little bit about kind of this late winter scouting, use of trail cameras, shed hunting, what you can do now to help prepare you for next year. And we'll get all of his info at the end, but let me just tell you, if you want a cool Instagram account to follow with some pictures of some monster mountain bucks, Steve's got it. That is quite the Instagram account. But
well, thanks.
No problem. Okay, so Steve, we're done, and I know a lot of Ohio is like cornfields and flat, so it's a little bit different than your terrain. But in general, I think a lot of the scouting and stuff that we're talking about can be utilized either side of the the field, so to speak. But let's start with sheds. Okay, so you are really, really good at picking up sheds, and I've seen a lot of the pictures and stuff that you've posted. How are you going about looking for sheds at this time of the year? Is there any, what kind of things are you trying to locate and focus your time? I've heard people talk about spend, 80% of your time and 20% of the locations based on, bedding or cover or, rubs and stuff like that. What kind of stuff do you look for when you're out?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm really not one of those guys that is out there to just see how many sheds I can get each season. I like to go after particular deer, especially, when I know a bigger deer has survived the hunting season. And also, it might've been one that I put a lot of time into in the fall and I didn't get. It's kind of like a second chance, even though I'm not going to be able to kill the deer now, but just to maybe get his antlers is kind of like, a second place prize. So my main focus is targeting individual bucks for their sheds. That's my favorite thing to do. And a lot of that's going to, be based on, running cameras, right after hunting season to make sure they made it and, just putting the boots on the ground and just trying to see what's out there. And we can touch on, more on like what I look for when I am shed hunting a particular buck, but I just wanted to make sure that, if you're one of those shed hunters that's just looking for the guy to tell you how to get 100 sheds this season, I might not be that guy, but an individual deer, like that's more my style.
Gotcha. So how long have you been doing that as far as really going after one specific deer?
It's probably been doing that pretty heavy about 5 or 6 years. And I'll be honest with you, some years I don't, get certain deer sheds, and in between looking for a certain buck, I always find other sheds too. The biggest deer that I've ever hunted, was a buck named Goliath. Never did real well hunting him to kill him, but I always did pretty good getting the sheds. And, I think the main key with that buck was I really understood his wintering patterns. He would actually, from where he was in the summer to where he would winter, it was actually a 7-mile distance. And that's just as the crow flies. up and over mountains and through valleys. I mean, that I can't, I'm not really even sure how far, but it was, when you do it that way, it's probably closer to 10. But I just had a really good knack on, you know, getting on him every winter. And also he wintered in the same general area. So, you know, that when I first pursued that buck and when was having some success until he got killed, it was kind of like, wow, this is really cool. Like, it's just like hunting a big buck, but you only get to get a sheds, you know?
Okay. We got to back up there.
Yeah.
But you had a deer, Goliath, that you would find his sheds like 7 miles away from where he got killed. Is that what you're saying?
I actually have no clue where he got killed. I obviously it wasn't me or one of my clients, and really it was never a deer that I was really confident in killing, because I would get him in an area all summer and then I'd lose him, you know, roughly late August, early September. A couple times I got pictures of him in hunting season, but it was never anything consistent. But then 7 miles as the crow flies, from where I would always get him in the summer, but and then to where he would winter, that's what was the 7 mile gap. Like, so, and that made him really hard to hunt, because, or at least actually hunt to kill, because there's so much area in between there. And that's where I really think I struggled. I never really was able to nail him down. We did one time, the first time I ever really got to know him, was when I was guiding one of my gun clients, and we almost had an opportunity at him, but that was when he shifted into his wintering area. So, I mean, I could tell you, we could go on and on about that deer as well, but the reason why I really brought him up was, once I started, you know, going after his sheds every winter, every year after that, I was kind of targeting the biggest deer I knew that was still alive. And then I would try to go find the sheds.
Okay. So in transition out of that, like, I guess my question is, did you just happen to find that spot where he was wintering 7 miles away, or were you out setting new cameras for the following season and thought this looks like a good area? What were you looking for to find? I mean, I know how big some of those woods are over there. And to me, it most it's just daunting to even think about where to start, and you use basic stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, how did you just stumble upon an area 7 miles away where you're finding this deer?
Well, actually I was never even going after that deer. Okay. We stumbled, the first time I stumbled onto him was when I was guiding a guy, and then it was out of pure luck. The following summer, I got him on camera 7 miles away. And to be honest with you, for the first year or two, even though he looked identical, I was like, ah, it can't be the same deer. But when I got both of his sheds, that's when I was like, no, it's him. It's definitely the same deer. So it was, you know, identical match. He had, you know, he had this little split G2. You could just tell it was exactly the same deer, and he would disappear from a summering area. And, you know, hey, I mean, it seems like 7 miles is like impossible, but for a deer, that, even though it's not very common, it's not hard for a buck, a mountain buck especially, to travel 7 miles in the matter of even 2-3 months, you know?
Yeah. No, that, okay. So that was, you answered my question there. And yep. I know that, you know, when you get in obviously into the rut, they really can move, but
yep,
to find it 7 miles away. And I could sit here and do a perimeter loop of 7 miles and where the hell all the deer could be from my house, but what keeps it interesting. Right. So you obviously have got spots out there in the woods that you have had success with, that you take your clients towards. If you're going into a brand new area, and I know you're doing a lot of public stuff, what are some things that you look for, or like somebody needs to look for, to take these clues to utilize towards next year? Or like Goliath, does it not even matter because their winter bed is going to be completely different than the summer bed and all that kind of stuff?
Yep. There's a lot of different factors that go into that. Number one is, you have to gauge how bad the winter is. a really bad winter with a lot of deep snow, a lot of real cold temperatures, those bucks are not going to be where they are in the fall or other times of year, because they're going to have to seek out like more evergreen habitat. They're going to be going down lower in valleys where there's less snow and less wind. So if it's more of a mild winter, you have a much better chance of postseason scouting and collecting information that will be more relevant to what the what those deer are doing in the fall. So, you know, it all depends. And then also, you also have to understand that every buck is a little bit different. Not, obviously, not every buck has a 7-mile shift. A lot of them do have shifts different times of the year. But you, most importantly, you just got to keep an open mind and just kind of learn a buck, you know, as he, as you're pursuing him, and just kind of be ready to expect and adjust to just about anything.
I had some questions that we can jump into, because I found like maybe 3 sheds my entire life. 2 of them were on a fairway on a golf course. I was just driving by, having to look at like, oh shit, there's deer antlers. The other one, a dog brought to me. So I put literally 0 effort into finding sheds, but I get super jealous when I watch people like on Instagram and Twitter, they find, you know, they're finding, like, what really makes me jealous is the guys that, and there's a woman, I can't remember her name on Instagram, but she's like a shed hunting, just like savant for elk. I mean, she's got like, just like a driveway full of elk sheds. So obviously like, you're definitely kind of like a maniac. It sounds like you want that second prize trophy. I didn't get to kill this deer, but find your antlers. So I appreciate that. So you pick out this target buck. Okay, I want this, not Goliath, we're going to call him. What's another deer you got in mind this year? Is it Goliath or is it something else?
I mean, this year I can't say I have any real particular names. Probably the one I'm going after the most is just one I call the Big Eight. So you could say
the Big Eight. So you've got the Big Eight targeted, and so you've been you have a relationship with these deer midsummer. It could be years long, but if it's just, you know, midsummer to now, through scouting, through hunting, through trail cams, you've got like their general idea. So of like where this deer is at, right?
Yep, exactly.
So where do you go first? You go to his bedroom? Do you go to the food source? Do you go to the corridors? Like, are you hitting like old scrapes or rubs? Like, what's kind of your first plan?
For looking for sheds, we're talking, right?
Like, yes. Yeah. Looking for sheds. Honey. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So I find most sheds, probably like 80% of sheds in bedding areas. But the tricky thing is bucks are real temperamental this time of year. They're still real spooky. They don't want to be bothered. You know, they're kind of in a rest recovery mode because, you know, they just got over the rut. Winter's beating up on them. They got to preserve their calories. So if you go into these bedding areas too early, I've learned that, you know, and he hasn't dropped his antlers, you can push him out and he'll go find security something maybe a mile or two away, or, you know, a lot, you know, it can really screw things up. And that's why I love to run trail cameras right now, because I'm watching and seeing when particular bucks drop. And I think that's the biggest key to targeting individual bucks for sheds, because you don't want to pressure them too much. Now, one thing I do often is, even if I'm not, say, you know, I'm not really sure if a certain buck has dropped yet, you can pound food sources this time of year for sheds. They can still be pretty good because it's a bed to food pattern this time of year, that they're just thinking about rest, security, and food. There's not a lot of other things going on. And they're hitting the food sources mainly at night. So you're not going to disturb their pattern by looking for their sheds and, you know, in feed this time of year. It's those bedding areas that you really got to watch out for. But the problem is bucks are probably spending, you know, once again, 80% of their time in the bedroom on their bellies right now. So that's in my opinion, the most likely place you're going to find the antlers. So you just got to play your cards right.
So Steve, on every social media platform and like my little profile, I put that I'm a terrible deer hunter, because I am. I am a awful deer hunter. So help me understand how big a bedding area is for a buck. Are we talking like, you know, a mile square, like radius, or is it just like a couple of hundred yards? You know, this dude's picked out some good spots, you know, based off of the rain, off terrain features, and he's just going to, that's his spot. How big is a buck's bedding area? Like, everyone throws that around. How big is it? Yep.
I mean, that varies as well, but a lot of times I think this time of year, if they're not disturbed and they're in a somewhat, I don't want to say perfect environment, but if they got what they need, that bedding area might be roughly like a 300 yard square, something like that. They sometimes, and if it's in a perfect situation, heck, I've seen where a buck, it looked like he probably used the same two, three beds within a, you know, within 20 yards of each other for days or weeks too. They don't want to move a lot right now. They're, once again, they're trying to preserve as much energy as they can. Their bodies are telling them that, you know, especially in the big woods this year, you know, and really most years, it's not like they can go to the cornfield or the soybeans and just fill their bellies up easily and go back in the woods a couple hundred yards and lay down all day. Like, they're digging through 2 feet of snow to eat fern roots that have very minimal nutrition. Yeah, if there is acorns, it's still a lot of work digging through the snow to get them. And, you know, browse can be even hard to come by. So even though they will have specific feeding areas, the majority of their time is in those bedding areas. And even in the bedroom, it's not, they're not covering a ton of ground. So generally it's fairly small this time of year, if they have everything they need. Sometimes, you know, like another thing that they'll feed on this time of year is they'll follow the loggers. You know, as the loggers are cutting the trees down, the deer come in at night and they chew on the ends of the trees, you know, the buds and the tips, the browse. But once the loggers are done in a certain area and the deer have eaten all that browse, they move to where the loggers go next. So, you know, in the big woods, you in public land, you have very little control of controlling what the deer do at all. The deer just go wherever Mother Nature is kind of supporting them in a certain way. So once again, you got to hunt these kind of areas more with an open mind.
So will the deer specific, like bucks, that's what we're looking for during this time of the year, obviously like ground cover vegetation is non-existent. So if we're talking about cover, I mean, they're going to go, I mean, it could be just like a brush pile. I mean, it could be like you said, the treetops. So there, I would imagine that they're, and to tell me if I'm wrong, like it's going to be like the cover that they have available to them is like super tiny, like small. There's not a lot of options, right?
And once again, it depends on the area. I mean, what they really like during a bad winter, and we're getting into a bad winter now, is they really like evergreen, like hemlock, pine, spruce. It kind of blocks a lot of the snowfall. It blocks wind. It just makes a more easier environment for them. Problem is, though, in those areas is hemlock, if they do even feed on hemlock or pine or spruce, it's hardly any nutrition as far as browse. And then inside of those areas, there's very little for food sources, because it doesn't let any light in for plants and browse to grow. So it's more of just a bedding area. If I want to just jump out, if I was to explain the most ideal wintering big woods area, and these are somewhat common, is when they go into an area and they clear cut it, but they rarely cut the hemlocks, because hemlocks generally don't have much for timber value. So they'll clear cut an area and leave all the hemlock. And then around the hemlock, you'll get a ton of regrowth. So in the winter, they'll have a ton of browse in those areas, plus the hemlock for bedding. Those are probably the best places for someone like me and that hunts the big woods. That's probably your best big woods scenario for sheds.
So Steve, I'm just going to ask stupid questions because that's what we're here for. What does a buck bed look like? And I think I know the answer, but I also am not sure I do, because we hear about doe bedding and we hear about versus buck bedding, but you stumble upon something that clearly is an animal has been sleeping there. Right. And I mean, I've done it Is it one of these things like you got a solo bed, so that's a buck, you got a bunch of them, so it's does? Is there a different type of topography that one likes over the other? I mean, if you got bucks that are in bachelor group, they could have multiple beds, right?
No, that's still a great question. And there's times I find scenarios like, you know, I'm really not sure, but generally when you, cause all deer, even a lot of bucks this time of year grouped up together. So generally most of the bedding is going to be in a group right now. And doe bedding is when you can really tell when you see those little, the smaller, like a lot of different size beds, because you'll have your adult does and last year's fawns. Also buck bedding tends to be more well used. Like those beds, they'll pound on them, because bucks, all especially mature bucks, they always get the best in every area. Like they're going to have the most prime location to bed. And as long as there's not much pressure and the, you know, there's at least food in the general area, they're going to go back to those bedding areas and use them. Does just kind of, they'll bounce around a little bit more. You know, they kind of, you know, they'll get the second best. Plus they just, that just seems to be their nature. They don't always like buck. A certain buck might even lay in a certain bed many days in a row. Does, from what I see, don't do that as often. So a lot of your buck beds are much bigger. They could still be in groups this time of year, because you know you'll have groups of bucks. Plus a buck doesn't always just keep laying in the same exact bed, but he'll lay in the same area. So they're just going to be bigger beds, in prime locations, and usually very worn down beds. Like a lot of times there's no snow inside of the bed because it's all melted out. Doe beds, you'll a lot of times see snow still in the bed if you have snow, you know.
So I guess that was my next thing to lead into, was the snow topic. Now I know over in your neck of the woods, you guys have snow for like 9 months of the year. But we, sometimes we have it here in Ohio. Sometimes we don't. Currently we do, although I think it might melt later next couple days.
I got 44 and sunny here, but it's not going to be enough to melt all the snow we have.
Right. So how do you utilize the snow at this point? Or I guess if you've got snow, how are you utilizing it? Or if you don't have snow, if you go through a relatively dry winter, what are some things that you would look for in the woods at this time of the year?
I mean, I kind of like to have a mix of it. Right now, I'd prefer to have snow for shed hunting, and most shed hunters don't, because you know, the snow does cover up sheds. But generally your bigger sheds, which that's kind of what I mainly target, even if say if you have a foot of snow, the antlers will start to collect some heat, and even if they're covered up, as long as you just don't keep getting back-to-back-to-back snowfalls, those antlers will start poking through the snow even if they're buried. And that's mainly just bigger sheds. So, and it also, like, I'm sure you guys are familiar, like for deer hunting, when you have snow, it creates a background that's more suitable for your eyes to spot deer. And it's really the same for sheds. Like if you're looking for sheds with no snow, it's kind of more of a brown on brown with the forest floor. But when you have snow, those tines poking through like stick out like a sore thumb. You can see much better. Also, you're able to see where the deer have been more recently. And, you know, this time of year when it's colder and you don't have snow, your droppings, your tracks, like that stuff, that sign holds, it makes it look much fresher than what it is. Like 2-month-old droppings right now, because it's been cold, they're not all rotted out. And you really don't know exactly where the deer have been unless you have snow, because the snow is revealing the most freshest sign there is. So I do prefer to have snow, except I also, for postseason scouting, like for finding like certain trails and that kind of stuff, even like rubs and scrapes sometimes with snow, then it makes it more difficult. But for shed hunting, definitely prefer some snow.
Is it one of those things that you kind of take note of those areas? So say you stumble upon a, you know, deer highway or something, And then you take note of it and come back later and hang a camera, or, you know, put a pin on your maps or whatever, and then come back and check it later in the summer? Or is it something where you're going to go in right away and hang a camera and really start, you know, scouting that area for the next, you know, upcoming 6 months?
Yeah, I'm not putting a lot of cameras in new spots right now. The main reason is just this time of year, you have more battery issues. If you're thinking for next year, you're going to definitely have to, you know, go back right after winter, put new batteries in it. So a lot of my new spots, if I see something right now I like, I'll probably wait till spring once it warms up and then put a camera there. But I'm always, and it doesn't even matter right now, but I'm always looking for new things. And it might be an area that I know very well, but I'm always learning more and more about it. And so if I see something, I mark it on my phone or in my notes. You'd be surprised. My brain, I'm not the smartest person, but it does a really good job of remembering whitetail information. So I have not run out of memory in my brain for my whitetail storage.
Those are priorities, Steve. You've got your priorities set straight. We agree with that.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to tell my wife that, but I disagree.
All right, you don't tell me. Okay, we're good. So, as far as the cameras go, I hear a lot of people say, you know, whether it's the last day of the season, they pull the camera and they're going out to get their cameras out and that kind of stuff. I've never really quite understood that. I think you are on the same path, because to me, I'll have those cameras out and I want to wait till anybody showing up on their, you know, everybody that shows up on their has nothing on their head, right? And after that point is when I'm going to go in and start scouring for the sheds. I mean, that's what you guys are doing. Yeah. You leave it out until, you know what, middle of March or so, April maybe. Earlier up there than they do.
I mean, yeah, basically anymore, I'm hardly even bringing a camera back home. A lot of my cameras right now are still in spots where they were last fall, and I might just continue to keep them in those areas. But I'm just leaving cameras out as much as possible to collect as much intel as I can. I feel like it doesn't even matter what time of the year, you can always learn something from having, I mean, you probably know I run like 100 some cameras. So that's a lot of eyes in the woods at all times. And I'm constantly collecting information no matter what time of the year it is. Plus, I think one of the biggest keys, because I don't elevate my cameras, but I think where I have the advantage of not having to do that is when you leave a camera there for so long, I'm telling you, the deer start to get used to it. They start to get more comfortable. When I have, and I don't have a major issue with not elevating cameras, but occasionally when I put a camera in a new spot, you know, especially mature bucks, they get a little bit, you know, leery about it. But when something just stays there after a while, they're like, okay, I'm used to this. This isn't hurting. So, you're gonna do way better leaving cameras out more throughout the season and throughout the year than taking them all back home.
So we're on to something I didn't even anticipate talking about, but you got 100 plus cameras out there. That's a lot of pictures. How many of them are, I guess, cell cams? And I don't mean, I'm just trying to figure
out. Last year, I think I only ran about 10 cell cameras. Right now, I'm not even running any cell cameras, just because I really don't see a need for them right now, unless I had cell signal in an area that I was targeting a buck that I wanted to get sheds from. Any of the bucks that I'm after this year, most specifically, you can't put cell cameras in there. That's my biggest challenge with cell cameras. I love them. I think they're great, but I have very limited cell signal in the areas that I hunt. So it's just not worth it.
So then how do you catalog all this stuff? I mean, you just got files and files of pictures. And I can only imagine what it's like going through 100 cameras. I get excited when my two cameras, you know, send me 20 pictures at night. But
And I don't know if you guys know, but I even collect a lot of data, and I study from my cameras, like, you know, mainly just daytime buck movement. But in the past 3 years, I have every daytime buck picture, whether it's a spike or a 160 inch 10 point, I have everyone journaled from October 1st to November or December 15th. That's when I do my study. Basically, I'm only really interested in what happens through hunting season, you know, but I like to monitor how weather and different factors influence buck movement. And I tell you what, it's really been, it's been very interesting and a huge learning experience collecting all that data. But I'm talking every buck picture I've had out of 100 some cameras in 3 years, I have journaled and, you know, stored away.
As you're collecting that data and looking through, what stood out the most?
The biggest thing that stands out the most is temperature. Temperature has the greatest influence, I think, on buck movement just about any time of year. Now it's funny, if you know, we jump into that a little bit. A cold front, you know, say you get a cold front in, you know, early to mid December, it will actually have an opposite effect on buck movement, because bucks are more of in a winter survival mode, and they will tend to move less a lot of times during a cold front then. But you get a cold front mid-October, early November, pretty much any other time, they're moving like crazy during the day. But weather and mainly temperature, from what I see, like another thing is, you'd be amazed how just a cold morning, like a frosty morning, will have a huge impact on how bucks will move throughout the day. Like, it can be, if it's like below 32 one morning and just turns into 70 in the afternoon, the movement will still be good. Like, there's something in, at least the whitetails that I observe, there's something inside of these deer that are triggered extremely by weather, and especially temperature. It really triggers movement.
Steve, on that idea of the late November, through mid-December, where the cold front will hold them down, how much of that do you think is them just bearing down because it's, it coincides with your guys' rifle season?
Yep, and that's another huge thing too. If you looked at my data, most years it's just like a light switch. And eventually I'll post the graph. This sounds crazy, but I have all the data except one camera, and it's like 2 miles back in, and I'm not, until I check that last camera, I'm not really revealing much of my data. But getting back to your question, as soon as gun season starts, and after that, from gun season, from the beginning until like December 15th, when I quit collecting data, that is the absolute worst stretch of daytime activity throughout the whole year. So absolutely, it has a tremendous effect. And it might not affect as much like on private land. I'm only monitoring public land, so, you know, where you have a fair amount of hunting pressure.
Wow. Well, now you got my mind going. This is what always happens during our podcast, is that somebody
that's
says,
okay.
Okay. All right. So you pick up some data and stuff here in the late winter. How much of it are you using for next fall, when your season starts again? I mean, is it something you take a lot of thought into, or just kind of like, okay, I got it, this is where they've been? And
To a certain extent, like, some people will tell you, like, I get pictures of the same buck every year within like a 3-day period. I don't really see that very often. The most consistent shift I see with bucks is like what I call the late summer, early fall shift. When they, you know, just about, or during, you know, they're shedding their velvet, or just about shedding their velvet, they split up from their bachelor groups. That shift seems to be very consistent, as far as like, it seems to happen with individual bucks about the same time of year, and they tend to go to the same spot during that shift. But other than that, I'm not like real crazy about, like, you know, it's October 20th, I had this picture of this buck in this spot this year. I'm going to hunt that same tree next year, October 20th. He's going to show up. But you will see, like, bucks have rutting areas. They have different areas they use for different times of the year. So that's where then, you know, that data is helpful. But most importantly, my main reason for data is learning how to predict deer movement, judge deer movement, and take advantage of it through, you know, through weather mainly. That's kind of my main thing. And I am going to start paying more attention to the moon. I don't think the moon is the greatest factor, but it definitely has some influence too on deer movement.
So let's just kind of wrap this up with shed hunting.
Sure.
Because that's what like I really want to be successful.
Yeah. Let's make sure.
So that data talk, the deer stuff, I feel like we could dive into that for like hours and talk about scouting and deer movement. Yep. And you're going to have to come back on. So commit now to like a midsummer talk, Steve.
Yeah. No problem.
So shed hunting, let's kind of tie this all together. You've got, so if I've got public land, private land, doesn't matter. I've got deer pattern, 80% of your sheds you find in bedding areas. When do you start looking for, like, when do these guys start dropping antlers? Is it now? Is it January? Is it February, March?
I kid you not. I've had bucks drop right around Thanksgiving before. That's not super common. Every year though, at least out of all my cameras, I'll get three or four bucks that have dropped even end of November. It just kinds to gradually get, you know, more frequent as the winter goes on. There'll be a good, you know, another 10% usually in December. Then January, you'll probably have 30% of your bucks dropping. And it does seem like February most years for me is when I see the majority of the bucks drop. But once again, I think antler dropping, shedding, whatever you want to call it, is all based on an individual deer, testosterone levels, his health, mentally, physically. It's all tied into when those antlers drop. And I even think some of it, you know, when I say mentally, I think some bucks get to a certain point where maybe the antlers start to just feel a little bit loose and he's just like, I'm getting these things off. So every buck's a little bit different, but that's why I like running the cameras, because I'm able to know who is dropped in a certain area.
So how long do you have to find a shed? I mean, will they be there midsummer, or are they going to be like, they just disappear? Like what eats a shed, I guess, is the dumb question.
Yeah. Today. And I mean, that really varies. You know, mice, squirrels, rodents, I think they all have an effect on eating sheds. At least where I'm at, I don't think animals are your worst enemy. You know, on public land, probably other shed hunters are your worst enemy. Plus, it also depends on if you have an early spring and the woods get green really quick. You know, when all the grasses and ferns and weeds, they all start to sprout up, that's when it gets real challenging. So putting as much time in before spring truly arrives, that's most important. I will say, many times, I mean, I don't know how, I don't have the number in my head, but I can tell you that I've shed hunted maybe a buck 1 year or even 2 years, and I only got like the one shed. Then 2, 3, 4 years later, maybe longer, I found the other one to match it up. So many of them I found that I believe had been sitting there 4 or 5 years and never even chewed a bit. So quite honestly, I rarely sometimes ever totally give up on a certain shed. I may not pursue it as heavily each year, but when I'm going in a certain area, when, you know, if there was a really big deer in there that I shed hunted a couple years, and, you know, I know that shed's in there somewhere, whenever I go back through there, I'll always look around for it again. And occasionally I've found it.
Do you ever run into like deadheads or anything?
Very few deadheads. I want to say in my time, you know, as much as I've been doing this, I bet you I've only found like 10 deadheads. I've only ever found a couple really good ones. And I did the smaller ones I never even bring home, because in Pennsylvania, I don't know if you guys know, if you take a deadhead, you actually have to report it to the game commission, and then you might have to pay $10 per point. That's how it works. So a 4-point to me, or 3-point, or a spike, like, it's not worth paying 30 or 40 bucks or whatever. Now, the game commission has been really good to me. The two nicer ones I've ever found, I called and they said, you know what, Steve, we just appreciate you calling and trying to do it right. And they gave it to me for free. Maybe I shouldn't have said that, because I know there's other guys that have had to pay. But I think most importantly, they just want to make sure people are abiding by the law.
Yeah, for sure.
Very cool. Well, I don't know. Paul, do you have any turkey questions? Steve, do you do turkeys up there?
I don't guide turkey, but I love the spring turkey hunt. So I am a big turkey hunter.
That's Paul. Paul, you have any questions for Steve?
It was funny. I you're talking about 100 cell or 100 trail cams. I'm like, man, I wonder how many turkeys he gets on that. Like,
oh yeah,
be able to figure out where they're at. Pretty.
Oh, so. Actually, the gobbler I killed last year. We didn't know we had all these turkeys hanging around our camp, but running the cameras was like, holy cow, there's a pile of gobblers in here. And second day of spring turkey, you know, I went up by the camp and shot one. So once again, the cameras paid off to me. So
gotta love it.
Yep. Multi-tool. So, well, Steve,
yeah, that's good stuff.
We really appreciate your time, man. I know you got a busy schedule, so good luck this spring out there. Hopefully you find all the sheds that you're looking for. Good luck in the turkey woods, and next fall, and we'll get you on again. Talk more there in the summer. So
yeah, for sure.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, guys. And I'm looking forward to the next talk.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Yep. Bye-bye.